Podshow is pleased to bring you the following killer content direct from the all-new feature-rich podshow.com. Get it, play it, dig it.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queercast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Peter Maverick.
I'm Amy Matheny. This Queercast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Always worth it. American Airlines. Offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
And you're listening to the Windy City Queercast, show number 79. I'm Peter Maverick.
And I'm Amy Matheny.
Hello, love.
Hello. I am totally in a quandary. You know, Barack Obama has now announced officially that he's running. And, you know, there's just all this conflict now between most people I know about, like, Hillary, Barack. You know, like, we want to support Hillary because this is our last time to have it. And want to support Barack because he's the new, he's the future. He's right. Want to support Hillary because she's a woman. Want to support Barack Obama because he's African-American. You know, it's just like... we're going to have to see how these two size up. It's going to be interesting.
I think everybody's jumping the gun a little bit here because I've only heard very peripheral talk about where they stand on issues. And we've got time to learn these things.
Well, if you read Barack's book, you'll know where he stands. I don't know peripherally where Hillary stands as well today, but supposedly her website, Hillary, what is it? Hillary for 2000?
Yeah, I think it's Hillary. Yeah,
2008. Yeah. It's supposed to be awesome and really filled with a lot of information as to her. You know, I just think it's interesting because we actually have at least two candidates that people are passionately talking about and debating and saying, no, you can't be for Barack because this is Hillary's year, or no, Hillary, the Clintons are done. It's time to go to something new. And I don't remember this kind of energy. I mean, it was kind of Gore's problem. It was kind of Kerry's problem. Like, you know, Ben Affleck would get passionate about Kerry and Leonardo DiCaprio, but only like 2 weeks before the election.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really going to be interesting. And so many Democrats haven't like picked sides.
Yeah.
You know, even Rahm Emanuel here, who's the big guy who got all the Democrats, ruling again on the Hill. He hasn't even said kind of where he's going to land. I mean, he was promised to somebody and now he's not sure.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like I've got an eraser on my dance card and nobody knows where they're going. And it's very exciting.
It's going to be very exciting. Finally, it's interesting. And I almost don't feel like that, at least between the two of them, you know, usually the political game is the lesser of two evils. And I actually don't quite feel that so far. Maybe I will as time goes by.
I'm sure many Republicans feel that way.
Hillary's been doing some shady shit. She's been telling people, if you're going to support me, you can support no one else. She's put out some blanket statements like that, and she's been very strict in that, which is... okay, whatever. It's her game. She can play it the way she wants to. But still, I don't feel that, you know, I feel that she has a lot of experience, but then he has a lot of experience. So I don't know.
More time on the Hill and in the White House.
Yeah, she can play the game. She can hit the ground, I think, running, playing the game the way the game needs to be played.
Right.
But I also think that Barack can play the game his own way, which is maybe the way that the game needs to be played.
And she's hated because of her history. He's hated because of what he represents. Too many people, I mean, people in, I'm sorry, but more rural areas, and I can say this because I'm from them, you know, his name.
I can say it because I'm not from them.
His name is a liability.
Sure.
His skin color is going to be a liability.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's just the truth. And so it is going to be an interesting debate.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's interesting with Peter and I, if you listen to us, is that I don't know. Sometimes we don't debate so much. Sometimes we're in agreement, and I don't know, you know, that's why we need to hear from our listeners. And we did get an email back about a story last week about this Snickers commercial.
Yep.
Wayne Besson was on from Truth Wins Out, and Craig emailed us and said, you know, hey, I disagreed with Wayne. I thought he was really being just shrill about it. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted you all to debate him more on this. And I guess, Craig, the answer is I kind of can't this go around because Wayne didn't even come to me about wanting to talk about Snickers commercial. He wanted to talk about the other things. And so I kind of caught him off guard in saying, hey, let's talk about this. You know, sometimes you plan what you're going to talk about because you have limited time.
Sure,
that wasn't one of our topics.
No, it just kind of bloomed up and into itself. And I think the interesting, I mean, for those of you who don't know, who possibly have not encountered the story, there was some contention over a Snickers commercial that happened during the Super Bowl.
After the first break, right away, the kickoff.
The first one with two men through however it happens, they end up kissing. They're not gay. They're
like
kind
Lady
of,
and the Tramp. Yeah. Like one's got a Snicker bar in the mouth. Yeah. They're mechanics. They're under the hood of a car. The other one grabs the other end and they're kissing before they know it, eating the Snickers together.
They freak out and say, oh, let's do something manly as in sort of a negative.
Because
ooh,
they kissed.
We kissed. And then they rip out some of their chest hair, something like that. Now, in and of itself, I think on one hand, I can look at the commercial and I can say, you know what, that's not offensive. It's just what it is. But what it really represents, and you know, a lot of people have been talking about, well, there were other commercials that didn't get aired. There were a whole handful of them that were online that you can see that are much, much more offensive. And at the end of the day, and this is what I you know, wanted to respond with, that a corporate made a decision to pay for this ad, approved this ad, and made sure that they placed this ad very prominently.
On the third most watched television show in the history of television.
Now that pisses me off. That pisses me off because because in this day and age, you should be crossing your T's and dotting your I's appropriately. You shouldn't be doing it because there were people laughing at the queer community in this.
I mean, I usually go by my gut factor.
Yeah.
And something about my gut was like, oh,
yeah,
like
I didn't
instantly like go, oh my God, but something in my body just went, I'm supposed to digest this and it's supposed to make me feel okay. And right now I feel, I'm glad the next commercial's coming on, is how I felt. Had they had the two guys like freak out and then the next shot you saw them like maybe, you know, I don't know, you saw them do something and then maybe you saw them like, I don't know.
Well, it was as if
drive off into the sunset together or something.
Right.
They could have spun it to be kind of laughing at these two burly, kind of not attractive guys kissing each other, having a reaction, and then have them go off together. Might have been obviously a gay angle to it that would have been affirming and not
It just felt
negative.
It felt like people were laughing at us, and I can't help but think of a million other scenarios where if you would have juxtaposed two different races or, you know, it just was not acceptable to me. So I have to say that I do agree with Wayne's point of view. Now, with that said, I think what's interesting is how extreme some of the reactions are going to be are currently right now. And we can see that Wayne was a very extreme.
He had an extreme reaction.
And that's good because, you know, there should be people out there.
But I'm concerned about myself. And, you know, and Craig, you'll probably want to debate me on this. So write back again if you want. But I'm concerned about myself that I didn't have such a knee-jerk reaction.
Yeah.
And,
really?
You know, it's interesting because I was reading this article. Anybody who knows me, and especially my girlfriend, sometimes she's like, can you read a novel? Because I'm always reading Entertainment Weekly. Entertainment Weekly should sponsor me, just my life in general. But, you know, there was a really great You know, at the back of Entertainment Weekly, there's always an editorial, mm-hmm. and Stephen King does it once a month, and yep. different people do it. And Mark Harris, did it this, in the special Oscar guide issue that just came out, a week ago, talking about the Isaiah Washington incident mm-hmm. on Grey's Anatomy. And I know we've talked about it, and sometimes we include it in the news story, and I see Peter roll his eyes, and he's like, are we still talking about this? But here's the thing, and here's what he said that I thought was so great, because he talked about how, you know, how for 3 months after he said this thing that caused T.R. Knight to have to come out and all of that, and, you know, and then he apologizes, and then there's this whole, as he says, regret-soaked on-air interviews and this big group hug. He said, you know, for 3 months, everything suggested that everyone, Isaiah Washington, Grey's Anatomy creator Shonda Rhimes, Touchstone Television, and ABC, had just decided it was not a big deal for an actor to refer as a gay colleague as a faggot on the set. And that if everyone just averted their eyes, the word would become a tiny speed bump that a show could bounce over without looking back. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, this all came up again because he said the word again at the Golden Globes. And I just think it's really interesting because one of the other things he points out is that, you know, if they want to make reparations, potentially Grey's Anatomy, which does pride itself on being a show that has Latin, Black,
very diverse,
Asian. I mean, it has like every ethnicity on there, has no gay character.
None.
Well, it actually does. The bar owner is a gay man, but it's been used in a very small incident.
God forbid there's a queer who's
but there's
actually
not
working on the
in
staff.
The main right. There's not a doctor
right.
who happens to be gay.
Ooh, gay doctor, no.
Or going to be a doctor,
right.
you know. And nor is there on Lost, which is also an HBO show, nor on Heroes. Now, these are three shows where it's supposed to be like a group of people in an extraordinary mm-hmm. situation. How many times do you think there'd be that many people on a plane crash and not one homosexual would survive? And on Heroes, why is there no homosexual who has a special power?
I mean,
and then there are shows like The Office and The Wire, you know, which is a comedy, or a show like The Wire, which is obviously very gritty, where there actually have been gay characters. And, you know, Ugly Betty is obviously mm-hmm. an ABC show. And we should say that they actually are doing a lot with using trans characters mm-hmm. and gay characters, and they just are. It's not a big, well, it is a big storyline with the trans character was a big right. plot point, but it's not a sweeps week thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think it's interesting that he finally called these people on the carpet mm-hmm. and said, you know, really, it took like your feet being held over the coals, like you just wanted it to go away.
Right.
And I felt like that. I mean, Craig, that's why I think we have to say things, because we're getting spoon-fed, and I feel like now it's like, oh, that's kind of okay. They did it like that.
Right.
You pick one of those other awful endings off the Snickers where mm-hmm. you could watch the other awful endings that Craig even agreed were not good.
Right.
You know, hitting somebody over with a head with a lead pipe as the ending is something
right.
manly or...
It boggles my mind that it came out of corporate America, that somebody actually did that when you know...
It's a team of people.
It's a huge team of people, and that's a lot
of
fucking
money.
Exactly.
That a team of people do not see,
do not scrutinize every decision they make going.
And
into
I want to know which homosexual
it.
Really was biting their lip and feeling just that little thing that yeah. I felt watching it. Who probably worked for that ad agency,
absolutely.
Or for Snickers or Mars, or saw it? I'm guarantee you. I would bet $100,000 there was one homosexual somewhere around the whole process.
At least one.
Kind of had a moment of like,
is this okay? Is this okay? But here we go again. And just to touch on your point, when he was talking about in the article, we don't have gay heroes yet.
Yeah, we don't.
We don't have gay heroes yet. And it's going to take time for us to have gay heroes, which is why we need to call out shit that when people, you know, put mud on our face, we need to call.
Yep.
We really need to call them out on it, because it's a struggle. Nobody's writing those parts. You know, when we had Alex Billings on, Alexandra was talking about the same exact thing, that she just wants that to be a secondary part.
Yeah, why couldn't
of her.
She be on Heroes like a trans?
I know.
You know, can do something. I don't know. Sing a high C and glass cracks and she
right.
can walk through anything. I don't know. Something fabulous.
Oh, Alex,
know?
I hope you just heard that, honey.
I hope
can't
she
wait.
Did too.
But we don't have queer heroes visual yet. We don't. We will get them. I have faith we will get them. And I hope that someday maybe I can be one of the people who helps implement that.
Well, and
but
you're giving me a really great segue. I'm going to let you finish.
No. I was just
going
to say it's that's the why. That's the why
yeah.
I see. And that's, you know, I need to change that somehow.
Right.
That's why I'm doing what we're doing. That's why we're doing doing this thing. So,
well, and we have, you know, what we have done is we've sought out subtext, and you know, something that's been was a big part of my career was taking the television show Xena Warrior Princess and bringing it on stage as Xena Live. And throughout the course of doing that, because we acknowledged that they were tipping their hand, you know, to the television character of kind of having a lesbian fan base, and they started playing to it deeply and thickly.
That whole bathtub.
To where by the end they had declared that, you know, she was lesbian and showed the women in her life and all of that kind of stuff. And so a little bit of Lucy Lawless news. Now, many of you may know that she has been, you really did give me a perfect segue, because Xena Warrior Princess is a gay hero, and that's fantastic. But or bisexual, but still GLBT. But Lucy Lawless, queer, who has been really, I don't know. I mean, my friends, my Xena Live friends have been sending me, like, you know, these YouTube clips and things. And she was on that show where, like, famous, pseudo famous people sang. And she got it in her craw that she was a singer, and she's not a singer. And so she's been trying to do tours, and she's playing at the Dinah. You know, Lucy Lawless is going to be performing at the White Party at the Dinah. And it's a little, makes me a little uncomfortable. And I love her so much that I don't like to see people I love doing badly.
That's embarrassing.
It is. It's really embarrassing. And especially Alexander Billings and I have been emailing about this too. Well, finally, you know, she's been doing really great on Battlestar Galactica, and she's a great actress, or she did really great. That storyline's over, but she has signed a new show. She signed a new show for ABC, which is the hot network. And the network who brings us things like Ugly Betty and Desperate Housewives. And definitely gets kind of a gay pastiche and camp. She is going to be the star of the new. And once again, we're borrowing from the Brits like we did with The Office. Borrowing from the Brits like we did with Queer as Folk. She is going to be the star of the new ABC American version of Footballers' Wives. And I cannot tell you how excited I am, because if you ever watch the BBC Footballers' Wives, the old one, now they have this Footballers' Wives Overtime, and I'm over it. I don't like any of the actors on it, but the original Footballers' Wives series, fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. Lots of gay stuff, lots of soccer players, you know, who are bisexual and bend it like Beckham, beautiful boys and
butts
and you know, very gay, so, and very kind of like Dynasty, but athletic, right? You know,
I mean, will she have the accent, or will she lock
no
it?
It's going to be she'll be an American. I mean, it's going to be, I think it's going to be a bunch of sports women, like really high end, you know, it'd be like, I guess, Peyton Manning and Urlacher and all these kind of women's, you know, the wives.
Martina Navratilova's wife. No.
Yeah, exactly. The wives of, like, the people who make the most money. Michael Jordan's wife. I mean, it's going to be like, you know, think of who are the big players. I don't know if it's going to be only football. It may be, because that's the title. But Footballers' Wives, obviously, in London, referred to the soccer women. And, you know, and kind of like Posh Spice. I mean, it was kind of based on Posh and Beckham in a soap kind of way.
Vicks
so now that Bex has come to the States, it's just going to be really interesting. So there you are. It was out on Lucy's blog. Don't ask me how I know.
So I was not reading. Do you know when it starts?
It's actually a mid-season. I think it's a mid-season, so it should actually come out here in the next few months, I believe.
Well, we've got to get her on the program.
We'll get to get her on the program. I've never talked with her.
We got to get her.
I've had notes sent between her and her people and my people when we were doing Xena, but I've never interviewed.
My new addiction is coming, and it's returning. It's returning to television. Well, my latest addiction. Okay. America's Next Top Model is starting.
Oh, there you go.
February 28th, ANTM is coming back. And now I'm going to have it on the TiVo, so I can just keep the whole season.
Yeah.
I just don't have to really ever get rid of it, ever.
It's what's so good, isn't it?
It's just, and the commercials, who watches the commercials? I don't. I really don't. I've been able to.
I sometimes like them on those shows, because I think they do cater to the gay and lesbian community.
First
and I
spot.
Like to see who advertises and knows that they're reaching a gay and lesbian
audience. If I see that logo commercial with that lesbian with curly hair one more fucking time for the Cancer Institute research, it's like a 4-minute long commercial.
Yeah.
Even when you fast forward it in high speed, it takes forever to get through it. It's just amazing. But I've been watching a lot of Logo lately and a lot of the indie films. There was this Mormon film with this. Oh my God, it was amazing. But, you know, they were going to.
Oh, about Latter Days?
Yeah, Latter Days. I watched it.
We interviewed them a long time
Boys
ago.
Boys a little too hot.
Before you were there.
A little too hot.
That's
little,
what
little
other
too hot
gay people
that.
Tell me.
A little too hot. It was a beautiful movie, but just boys were a little too hot. So, rest in peace, DJ Peter Maverick.
Yes, Peter Maverick has spun out for the last time.
Yeah, DJ Peter Maverick. Yes,
DJ Peter Maverick.
I have to say it here, and I said it on my own program, but I have to say it here because the rumors are flying fast and furious. I gracefully.
Bitch, did they fire your
right,
ass?
Right, exactly. I walk into the club Sunday night. Bitch, what happened, girl? I heard you got fired.
I heard you got fired.
I did not get fired. I, you know, stepped down gracefully. I just needed to make some more room in
my life.
What's
his idea? You know, you're kind of cleaning out the, not that these were bad jobs. These actually were things that have led you now to what you love doing.
Yeah. I wouldn't have got here without night spots and DJing and all this good stuff.
Yeah, now you're firmly in the center of the community here and on the Queercast, and good for me and bad for them. But hey. I got mines. I got my Peter Maverick. I got my daily dose and my weekly dose and my bi-weekly dose.
In your areas, in your ear, the queer in your ear, right
he is
here,
the queer
right
in my
here.
Ear.
I want to mention something really quick because we had her on the program a little while back. She was just such a delight and such a joy. If you want to dive back into the archives, you can listen to that interview. Linda Etter is coming back to town.
She is.
She's coming back to town early in March on 3-3 at the Cadillac Theater. So for those of you who missed her when she was at Ravinia, definitely. Think about checking that out if you're so inclined.
She is so fantastic. You know, she's so evocative of Streisand when she sings Just Close Your Eyes. I've seen her at Ravinia many times and she's lovely downtown. So check that out at the BroadwayInChicago.com website. Mm-hmm. All the information. Linda Etter's only here for one night on March 3rd.
Yes. And speaking of super singers, today on the show, we have Dar Williams, who is just such a delight to chat
with.
What
a lovely lady. And man, has she just sat on a stool and played guitar amongst giants.
Huge. And herself.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, just amongst like everybody from Joan Baez to Mary Chapin Carpenter and many, many more, you know, just brilliant.
You're hearing her music, Salt and Peppered, all throughout the show today. She's coming to Chicago very soon.
February 24th.
She's going to be part of that series at the Steppenwolf.
The Traffic series,
which is just fantastic. I would just encourage all of you, steppenwolf.org, go there, see who you like, and just buy the tickets now.
Yeah,
just
buy a handful, because it's going to be, just make that a special, unique thing to you.
Yeah.
Get you.
It's a whole 3 weeks running. So,
and we're going to have a lot of the artists on our show. Sandra Bernhardt coming up, and the lesbian duo, the Diddy Bops, will be on as well. And Maud Maggart. So there's just all kinds of...
lots of good stuff. But today we have Dar Williams with us. So she'll be in the interview segment later on the show. We got all kinds of good stuff as usual for you. Got
the
some
news.
Got some Logan. And, you know, we'll be back after this.
Guess who we got to star in Legends? The hilarious comedy by James Kirkwood, Joan Collins, and Linda Evans together again for the first time since Dynasty. Of course they get along. Gotta go. That's Joan. Angel, isn't it thrilling?
No, I never dreamed Linda would be acting with me again. If you call that acting.
That must be Linda. Linda, sweetheart, I was just talking to Joan.
Really? Well, I've always enjoyed her work, ever since I was a little girl.
Are you talking to Linda? Find out if she's still in show business.
Is that Joan? Find out if she's still alive.
Hang on, I'm patching you through on conference call.
Joan?
Linda?
Darling!
I thought you were dead.
Joan Collins and Linda Evans live on stage in Legends, the comedy about big stars and bigger egos.
Need a vacation from your holiday? Crave some real relaxation and cuddle time without Cousin Susie watching your every move? Not to worry, GayHotelDiscounts.com is here to help. If you're a queen in need of a king, bed that is, you can find the luxury you desire at a price you can afford. Powered by the strongest search engine on the web, GayHotelDiscounts.com are your gay travel experts.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Nudist Colony Activity Coordinator.
Mr. Nudist Colony Activity Coordinator.
Wearing nothing but a whistle and a clipboard, you're living the real American dream. Getting paid to think up fun things to do naked.
Running free.
Sure, there's danger. Vinyl chairs, sunburns, chafage, and lawn darts completely out of the question.
Watch out!
Your keen instincts tell you to stick to activities that involve lots of bouncing and jiggling. And if that doesn't work, who cares? You're all naked.
It's your birthday.
So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, nudie boy. Because we all know, when the going gets tough, the tough get naked.
The nudist colony activity coordinator.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Club.
And for the week of February 12th, 2007, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
This is your last week to see the critics' must-see show of the season. About Face Theater presents Execution of Justice, Emily Mann's landmark play exploring the assassination of Harvey Milk, the trial of Dan White, and the infamous Twinkie defense. Directed by Gary Griffin of Broadway's The Color Purple, Execution of Justice is playing now at the Victory Gardens Greenhouse, 2257 North Lincoln. For tickets, call 773-871-3000 or visit aboutfacetheater.com.
Germany, 1722. Seven musicians apply for the prestigious and lucrative post of organist at the Thomas Church. Insecurities, shortfalls of talent, and wildly clashing ideologies collide, creating complications in a wild and witty exploration of the nature of music, ambition, and art. Written by one of the nation's foremost young playwrights, this deft and vibrant play draws its inspiration from history while taking much delight in its fictional flights of fancy. For more on Bach at Leipzig, log on to writerstheater.org or call 847-242-6000.
The Wooden Breeks is playing now at the Looking Glass Theater in the Water Tower Waterworks. Heidi Stillman directs Glenn Berger's masterful tale of a man tormented by the memory of his beloved and stuck in his own story. Join dreamers, schemers, and would-be lovers navigating their way through the murky Scottish town of Brood. For tickets, call 312-337-0665 or visit lookingglasstheater.org.
And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
The Windy City Queercast is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago and Legends, a comedy by James Kirkwood about big stars, big egos, and big hair, starring Dynasty stars Joan Collins and Linda Evans. Playing now. For tickets, visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Hi, Neil Deep Harris here from NewWorldAstrology.com, Windy City's very own astrologer. Now you can have a personal reading based on your own birth chart. Discover your life path, your gifts and challenges this lifetime, relationship compatibility, career, finance, and more. Practical advice using real astrology. It's unique to you. You'll be amazed what your birth chart reveals. Everyone has a unique life purpose. What's yours? Find out more at NewWorldAstrology.com.
And this is your Windy City Queercast News. Reverend Ted Haggard, who resigned as pastor of Colorado Springs New Life Church after revelations that he had been involved with male escort Mike Jones, has been pronounced completely heterosexual by Reverend Ted Ralph, a minister who helped oversee Haggard's intensive counseling. Haggard himself said that, "Jesus is putting me back together." However, skepticism runs rampant, with Jones saying, "It's hard for me to imagine someone who is performing oral sex and saying that he is straight."
Whoa. In Pennsylvania, a federal judge ruled in favor of a gay pride group in a civil rights lawsuit filed by anti-gay Christians who were arrested during an Outfest celebration in the city in 2004. The plaintiffs contended that they had been discriminated against because of their speech. The judge determined that the right to speak and assemble has limits.
New York Governor Eliot Spitzer's proposed 2007 budget includes $6 million to support GLBT-related health and human services programs, almost three times the $2.37 million in last year's budget. Among the agencies that will benefit are those that provide alcohol and substance abuse treatment and programs for homeless youth.
Four Seattle men have tested positive for similar HIV strains that are highly drug resistant. The results have spurred officials to examine sexual partners who may have also acquired the strain. Incidentally, the four men said they all have a history with crystal meth and have had several unprotected sex encounters.
A man whose photograph was distributed by police investigating the murder of gay porn producer Brian Kosis said that he was several hundred miles away at the time of the killing. The 19-year-old suspect, only known as Harlow, is a male escort in Virginia and says he was there when the murder occurred in Dallas Township, Pennsylvania.
In an exclusive interview with E! News, Best Supporting Actress nominee Jennifer Hudson confirmed that she and her Dreamgirls cast will perform during the Oscars telecast on February 25th. Also during the awards, Celine Dion will sing her new song, I Knew I Loved You, during a tribute to Italian composer Ennio Morricone. Morricone will receive an honorary Oscar at the awards.
Rosie O'Donnell will executive produce The Big Gay Sketch Show, a self-described comedy series set to debut on Logo April 24th. The show also has lesbian Married with Children star Amanda Bairs as a director.
Comic Kathy Griffin of Bravo's reality show My Life on the D-List will host the gay adult entertainment industry's biggest night of the year, the Gay VN Awards 2007 ceremony on February 24th in San Francisco. Excerpts from the event, which has categories such as Best Packaging, Best Threesome, and Best Marketing Campaign, will be used as part of Griffin's Bravo show.
Must be great material.
Good
she'll have
stuff. And that's your Windy City Queercast news.
Hey, this is Del Shores and you're listening to the Windy City Queercast.
Singer, songwriter, and author Dar Williams is one of those rare individuals who can weave life with music in seemingly effortless ways. Her songs tell real stories about the world around us and the people in it, and she has toured with many other artists who seem to weave a similar style of folk pop fabric. And along the way, she's put out 8 albums, 3 books, and she's not done yet. We're so happy, as part of Steppenwolf's Traffic Jam here in Chicago, that Dar will be appearing right here in Chicago on February 24th. Dar, how are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Hey, Dar. This is a first. We've never had you on our show, so it's thrilling to have you on the program.
Thank you. I mean, that's great for me to be here.
So let's start out very early on with you and music when you were younger. What was kind of your relationship with music? Did you grow up in a musical household? How did you come to finding music when you were a kid?
I grew up in the 70s. I think that was really so, there was a lot of music around. And you know, I guess one could say it's the same now. But it's, we had my sister play guitar, and we would sit around playing songs together, and we had lots of songbooks out, and I think my sister really wanted to be Joan Baez or Judy Collins, and we always had records playing. We had a lot of the folk pop stuff from the 70s or from the 60s playing, like the Byrds and the Beatles and stuff. So it just it was a musical world. And I assume that everybody else had a household like that, but maybe they didn't.
So early on, was songwriting always an interest for you?
Well, yes and no. I wrote a song when I was 11. But then I wrote a second song that I played for a friend of mine at camp who said, "That sounds like your first song." So then, of course, I didn't write another song for another 5 years, and would write songs for theater reviews and stuff. So I was a theater kid. And then after college, I went to Boston to write plays and to get involved with theater. And basically, I saw a friend of mine who's an actress just, really suffering from all the press. She would get good reviews, but the rest of the productions would be completely savaged. Local theater was never given any kind of booster, support from the community. And the only thing that was supported was stuff that came out of New York. And I thought, well, meanwhile, if I write a song, I can go to an open mic, pay $2, try it out in front of an audience, and find out who I am as a performer and as a songwriter. And I had been writing songs kind of secretly on the side, but that's the community that made itself open to developing artists. So that's where I went. That's where I stayed.
Isn't that interesting that there's somebody who has an even tougher time than an independent artist, and that's theater artists, of which, you kind of think when you talk to indie music artists, there can't be anything harder, and that it was interesting that you were able to see that theater seemed even more difficult. But maybe
absolutely. Absolutely.
And it seems like maybe it was that individuality, that it was just kind of you and yourself on the line with songwriting and being a singer-songwriter.
Well, that was something, I was actually hanging out with some of my friend's parents early on in my career, and I said, actually this is working out for me because I was such a terrible actress. I like being on stage, but I was such a terrible actress because I was always obsessed with what would happen if I lost a line and let somebody else down. Whereas if I forget a line or something happens on stage, I can just turn it into something else. That's what you do. Yeah. And my friend's mom said, "Oh my God, that's why I stopped being an actress. That's why I only wanted to do one woman shows." Yeah. And so, that idea that if it's just you and your resources, you can always turn it into something that can, sometimes if there's a flaw, or if I had a cold for like 7 months last year, and if I coughed on stage or something, I just brought the audience into sort of whatever was going on at that moment, and then we went on with the show, and the flaw on the carpet was fine. It was part of the overall one woman thing. So that it turned out to be a good medium for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, and theater seems to be where you're embodying other characters.
Yeah,
whereas music, do you feel like with each song, it's like you're a different character, or is it far more personal for you?
Somewhat. No, as with acting, it's really helpful to have an image as you sing a song, and if you can, if something's happened that day that spikes an image to you that is really makes the song present and wakes up the song, that's a really helpful thing. And like Uta Hagen says, you shouldn't tell anybody what that image is.
Right.
I've had a lot of good ones, you know, I try to bring new images and new faces even into my mind of who might be hearing a song for the first time to make sure that if I'm not in character, quote unquote, I'm at least experiencing the lyrics in some kind of fresh way.
This is the first time Uta Hagen's ever been quoted in my 6 years of radio. I love you for that. That's fabulous. I was a theater major. That's the only reason I say that, but there you go.
Oh, very well. You know, this is for Steppenwolf after all, but I was
this
right.
is true.
That,
this is true.
Make
this
it a secret. You know?
This is true.
So
this
I've
is true.
Been able to-
Right. At the top of the show, I mentioned I really enjoy how you sort of weave life and music together, because I sort of that's my concept of folk music in general. And I know I can't pigeonhole you into one place. I can't just call you folk. I can't just call you pop. I can't, you know, nor should anybody try that. But for you, what is that folky sound? Because you've toured with some big name, I mean, huge names, Joan Baez, Mary Chapin Carpenter, Patti Griffin, Eddie DeFranco, Sean Colvin, all these big names sort of in the kind of the pop, the folky indie scene. What is folk to you, and what is that? Is there a style?
You know, somebody said something early on that was great to me. He said, people are going to ask you what your genre is, and frankly, you are embraced by the folk community, and so you should always give your... you should always recognize that folk music is kind of the way people listen to music, as opposed to who is playing it to some extent. You know, I mean, so sure, an acoustic guitar would, if you want to be a folk singer, you know, you should probably play with an acoustic guitar. But, you know, some don't. Some play with electric. And but the way there's a group of people who tend to take a chance on music, go out, like to hear things that they feel are uplifting, like evenings that sort of start in one place and take you to another place, and like to feel things in concerts. You know, it's like the opposite of headbanger music. And although, you know, that's a certain ecstatic experience, and that's cool, but the people who come to hear music actually want to sort of have that mix of the music and the life, and, you know, have that synergy. And to experience it almost like theater, you know, sort of where it comes to a place. And and I love them for that. And they'll often come and hear somebody who's, I mean, gosh, when I was first starting out, I wasn't that good, you know, but they would still come hear me opening for people and come hear me do concerts in people's living rooms and stuff, because they just supported the idea of people being out there finding ways to express themselves through lyrics and music. And that can take a lot of directions, but that is always, you know, but knowing that audience is out there listening to my lyrics makes me really take what I do very seriously, whether I call it folk or just my music. I feel every song that I'm writing, every song feels important. I feel like, you know, there's a reason that's not clear to me, but that is directing me to write and finish a song and all that stuff. So somehow I think that is folk music, you know, folk music that you really write from from your heart, that doesn't have a commercial end, doesn't have a monetary goal, and that seeks to express something, that, you know, arrest a moment and really feel something.
Well, and it's amazing too, because it's kind of an isolated form in some ways, but yet folk artists seem to come together better and collaborate more than in other genres, I feel. And one of the fabulous things was you went out on the songwriters tour with just three amazing ladies, Mary Chapin Carpenter and Patty Griffin and Sean Colvin. And I was wanting to know if I said each one of their names, kind of what pops into your mind, because you'll give us an inside skinny. If I said Mary Chapin Carpenter, what do you think of?
Well, transformative.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan. But yeah. I also, she was able to bring a certain kind of ballad to country music that really expanded the genre. Yeah. You know, it was actually, it's very much in the vein of Loretta Lynn and a lot of wonderful country artists. But, you know, I think Chapin tends to think of herself as a folk artist. Mm. But she was bringing a wonderful storyteller sensibility to her songs, and you started to see a lot of that showing up in around her career of other people singing ballads that were really nuanced and personal and empowered, you know, like a lot of strong women in her songs. So I think that she's a poet, but I think that how she came into country music with that poetic sensibility was a really big deal, and you know, synchronized with a lot of other women doing the same things, and it really did a lot for pop country.
What about Sean Colvin? Just came out with a newer album.
That's the word that crops in my mind with Sean is honest. She's just so honest about who she is. You know what her. If she wants to watch a movie at 2:00 in the afternoon, she'll just plop down and watch a movie. And she's just very, very real and very true to what she needs to do just to be on the road. And the road can kind of make you nutty. And she does what needs to do to survive on the road in a very sort of real, unapologetic, honest way. And she's not judgmental. She's friendly. She's fun. She's you know, because she has all this, instead of trying to hide anything about herself, she's just very true to what she is, and then she's just a very genuinely loving person. So, and I think that her songs, again, you know, I think everything that she writes is on purpose, because it's, you know, what she wants to do. It's what draws her. She's just really in touch with herself.
And what about Patty Griffin? I mean, I know that Patty right now is, you know, in many ways right now, she's being known so much as a songwriter, with everybody from Jessica Simpson to the Dixie Chicks and others covering her music in the pop scene. What can you tell us about Patty, who also just released a new album last week?
Oh, I didn't know she did. And I didn't know the Jessica Simpson thing. That's awesome.
Yeah, she did. I don't know how awesome that is, Dar, but it's good for her.
Kidding?
It's good for her financial pocketbook. There you go.
Yeah, I was. You know, I'll give my girl like a ching there. the thing, Patty also is. She's very ethereal. She writes about these wonderful. You know, we used to sing a song called Mary, which was about her. I think it was her great grandmother. And possibly your grandmother, but she really sings. She's kind of like John Prine, so that's why I would sort of call her sort of ethereal, because she tends just to capture these beautiful pictures of very sometimes tragic people without prescripting, you know, without coming up with anything to as a solution. You know, she just isolates both really beautiful and somewhat tragic people in time, and sort of gives them, you know, the woman making pies with the hairnet at 5:00
kills
in the
me.
Morning.
Kills me every time I hear that song. I have a friend who calls me. It's my old gay boyfriend, who now we're both gay, but he'll just call me sometimes he'll just go, "I'm making eyes," and we just know exactly what that means. Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, yeah, it's a beautiful, exactly, and she is. But she has a lot of songs like that about, you know, Long Ride Home is a man driving home in a long black car from his wife's funeral, realizing all the things that he never really gave to the marriage, you know. Yeah. And I think she has some I mean, I think she would probably say that there's sort of generations of Irish, you know, poetry in that, that there's, that you write these sort of odes to people and situations that don't resolve into a happy ending. And I'm always, you know, I'm such a therapy girl, you know, there's always something in my songs that sort of shows how a person is trying to climb out of a pit, whether they get out or not, you know, that's so much a part of, you know, relationships that might be doomed, but there's a lesson there, you know,
right,
where
right.
I think she's just like, it's like flower petals, you know, she just like puts these things out there.
Little people.
We like little people on our show.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. He's a friendly guy.
So anyway,
that's how I would that's how I would define those women off the top of my head.
I think part of one of the great things that you do is too, you're such a good storyteller and such a colorful and vibrant storyteller like that. Do you have to find that balance between telling the super personal stuff and the impersonal, or how, because some of the stories can be, you can put yourself out there maybe a little bit too much. You can be a little too vulnerable with your music. So how do you strike that balance, or do you even look for that balance?
I'm just sort of lucky. I think that, and this might be sort of, you know, if there's a muse of song, I think one lucky thing is that usually you're not really ready to render something, you know, musically. If you're not really ready to present something musically, if you're not ready to present it, you know, poetically. Mm-hmm. So if you're going through something and it's still kind of a big dark jumble, usually that means it's so close to you that you probably shouldn't be putting it out in the world all over the place. But once it's become a defined thing, like a breakup where you really understand exactly what form it took and what it was and how beautiful it was as well as how sad, then you're ready to give it to the world and share it with the world. And so there's one song that touches on family stuff that also touches on other people's stuff. So I took some poetic license and made it sort of my own experience. But my mom was like, oh, well, hopefully people know the difference between the two. but it's never been, I think once I'm ready to do it, when you feel like you got a handle on something, it never feels too personal because you feel like you've probably captured something that was just very true to itself. And to share it will make it more universal as opposed to isolating.
The triumphant knowing smile.
That's right. So on Saturday, 24th of February, you will be at Steppenwolf as a part of their Traffic series. What kind of evening will that be? And are you kind of creating a special show for that venue? And what will your fans be able to expect?
Well, you know, there's some gigs that I do where fraught with associations, good associations usually, that I have to sort of be careful to make sure not to get too excited. So, you know, my husband lived in Chicago. He was an actor in Chicago. I mean, a lot of people went to Chicago because Steppenwolf was their model of either something they wanted to participate in or start themselves. And so it's one of these things where I'm going to have to sort of say, I am a musician. I've been invited here as a musician. I'm not going to make a lot of theater references. I'm not going to go there, but it does make me hope that it'll be more of like of a Lily Tomlin kind of one act show than just a one woman concert. But you know, that's where one's head goes when you think about doing something at Steppenwolf.
Yeah, so, I would think that the auspice of it is just so high and so fantastic. I mean, what an opportunity for musicians to be on that stage.
Right. So you kind of wish that it would, so you hope that maybe we'll have a little more structure. So I think I probably will try to make sure I have a set list that kind of has some structure to it, more so than usual. But, you know, organic has always worked too, because when you've got the kinds of responsive audience that well, that Chicago is, and Chicago is the city, you can't have a Steppenwolf without an audience that's able to appreciate what how unique and wonderful that is.
Yeah.
So, you know, even with an unscripted show, if you kind of follow along with an audience like the kinds I have in Chicago, it always works out great anyway.
Excellent. Well, we want folks to know that if you have never seen Dar Williams, this is your perfect opportunity, especially if you're in the Chicagoland area. Come on out Saturday, February 24th at 7:30. You can pick up tickets at steppenwolf.org. You can phone the box office 312-335-1650. Or for all these good links and all kinds of good stuff, you can visit darwilliams.com for information and then further tour dates in case you can't make it to Chicago and want to pick her up in another venue. Dar, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
The law inside a circle. As they jump, I hope that you will. Up and down, up and down. When did you cave into this role that you were cast in? When did dress up turn to fashion? Throw your gown up and down. There's always a sky that it hears.
And thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This show is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light, always worth it.
And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago, for the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
So that's our show. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick. Please comment on our shows on our website and in iTunes.
The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it.
Windy City Queercast, queer and now.
Around on cold streets, here's a shell to hear the heartbeats, very loud, very loud. Where's the pain? It's only rain, it's only slowing down a work day, only singing happy birthday to a crowd, very loud. So turn on the sky, let it hear.
The best and the brightest served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Pod Show and Limelight.